Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Today's guest was first on our screens in Made in Chelsea. Since then, she's worked extensively in fashion, in beauty and in fitness. She's married to Hugo and she has a little baby girl called Sienna. It's Millie McIntosh. Hi.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for the lovely intro. I'm very well, thank you. I'm so excited that we finally managed to make a date work. I've wanted to come on the podcast and chat all things motherhood for a while, so I'm really happy that we've made it work.
Thank you. How's your day been?
It's actually been a really, really amazing day because Sienna said her first word today and it was mama. And
No way.
I just feel like it was a really like big milestone day, so I'm in a really good mood.
How many babies say dada first?
Right, I know, that's what everyone always says. They always say dada, it's easier to pronounce. Apparently I said dada first and Hugo is actually quite furious.
That's so good.
And I got it on camera because I was actually recording my day today. Occasionally I kind of do it like day with us on my Instagram stories and I record throughout the day as much as possible, like Sienna's routine and all the things we do together. So I was filming her and saying, say hello, mama. And she actually just went, mama. And I had the camera on her face. And like, when does that ever happen? You're actually filming when, you know, something happens. And so I feel really grateful that I've got the moment on camera as well.
And also, because there's always that moment where you're like, did she say that? Did she? And now you've got it there.
Like, exactly.
That's evidence.
The minute if they don't do it again straight afterwards, then, you know, I would have got Hugo to come in and gone, Sienna, do it again, and she wouldn't have done it and he wouldn't have believed me.
Now you know, though, that whenever she's hurt, whenever she wakes up in the night, it's going to be mama until she can say dad. Or is it already you anyway?
I feel she is a real daddy's girl, but, yeah, someone else did say that to me. They were like, once they start, it's literally like, mama, mama, mama. They're like, mummy, mummy, mummy all day. And you're actually a bit like, oh, my God, help. But today it just felt very special. So,
Millie, what was your childhood like? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Wiltshire.
I've heard of this. I've seen it on a map somewhere.
It's like southwest of England is what it's about. An hour and a half from London, really beautiful countryside, lots of lovely kind of downs. And my childhood memories are like lots of lovely family walks, playing in the garden, children's parties, cakes, you know, just all the good stuff. Lots of family time. I've got a younger sister who's 13 months younger than me. So
wow,
we're really close in age.
That's quite close, yeah.
Yeah, we're still really close. We were really close in my childhood and... Yeah, I think that's why, for me, I've just always wanted to be a mum, because I feel really lucky I had this really amazing family unit and that really kind of made me want that too when I grew up. And
so you always felt like it was going to be part of your future if you could?
Yeah, definitely. I always kind of, in my head, was like, I can't wait to be a mum and start my own family.
Yeah. How did you and Hugo meet? Because you met quite young.
We met quite young. We actually met when I was about 16 in a nightclub. in a nightclub. Which I was 16. Probably too young to be in. I'm like, Sienna, never listen to this. Oh God, that sounds awful.
We all did it, Millie. We really did it. Yeah.
And the nightclub was called Bougie, and it was in South Kensington, and I can't remember what night it would have been. But we used to like go out on like weeknights. I can't remember what night it was.
But
it,
we were young and reckless then.
Yeah, we used to go. We used to just remember going out on like a Tuesday night. Why? It's a Tuesday. Like,
of course you go out on a Tuesday. Why wouldn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. Like, what else would you do on a Tuesday night? Literally feels so long ago. It was a long time ago. So we met in a nightclub and we snogged. And then, but we didn't like start anything. We just kind of knew each other, fancied each other. There was a bit of that kind of past history where, you know, he'd hooked up with one of my friends. I'd probably hooked up with one of his friends. So we kind of like weren't really allowed to go there. Yeah. We kind of knew each other, and it took us a couple of years until I think when I was about 21, but then we were then in a relationship. When we were on the TV show, the relationship was real and stuff played out on the show. And then we like didn't speak for a long time. And then like about just over 5 years ago, we kind of like reconnected as friends and then got back together. And yeah, the rest is history.
Was there a feeling when you got back together, you know, you've shared that history, you've both gone your separate ways and then reuniting, was there a feeling of, if we're doing this, we're all in? And it's everything. It's marriage. It's having a family.
It was kind of like an unsaid thing. It was just really serious really quickly. And we didn't even really need to have that conversation. I think we just both knew how we felt about each other. And it was very different to when we were together before, because we'd both grown and changed a lot as people. And it just felt different. Yeah. And I remember a friend saying to me, she was like, you're going to get married and have babies. And I was like, oh, I can't even think about it. Like, I was like, I don't want to jinx it. I don't even want to think about it. But like in the back of my head, it was what I wanted. Here we are.
So after getting married, how did you decide the right time to start trying for a family? Was that a conversation that you had, or was it just a case of let's just see what happens?
It was when we got engaged, I remember we talked about it and I said, okay, so I want to get married in a year. And we got engaged like in the summer. I was like, okay, I want to get married next summer. And then I want to start trying a year later. And then I want to have a baby a year later. And that's literally how it happened. And I am a planner. I like to plan. So I actually couldn't believe it when it actually did come off like that, because you don't know, right? You don't know how long it's going to take. It's very unpredictable.
You two got together young. You spend so much time trying not to get pregnant.
Right.
So that when you actually switch that on its head and go, no, now we're doing this to get pregnant, you just don't know what's going to happen until you actually start trying.
We literally said, okay, we'll start trying on this day. And 5 days later, I was pregnant.
And so you go, we're going to have so much sex, it's going to be brilliant. All of a sudden, no, we're not.
we went on holiday, and I was using I used an app to track my cycles, and I knew when we were away it was like the end of my kind of fertile time, and I kind of mentioned it to him, but I didn't want to like freak him out. But we had this like one night where basically we had like a chance, and it was like the first night of our holiday. And when we woke up the next morning, we both just knew. I can't explain. Like, he was like, that was it, wasn't it? And I just was like, yeah. And then the rest of the holiday, we didn't really talk about it. Like, we just kind of had a nice time. But I didn't really drink kind of thing. And then when we got home, I took a test and was pregnant. And that was that.
That's incredible.
I was so shocked. Like, I remember I woke up at like 5 a.m. with jet lag, and I had got a test the day before when we'd got back from holiday. And I took it, but I then like forgot. I went and made a cup of tea, went next door, and about an hour later, I went back into the bathroom and was like, oh yeah, turned over. And was like, ah. Went and like woke him up screaming. And he was just like, what? He really was, because I had said to him, honey, it's going to take at least like 6 months. So he was really shocked. But I thought most of my friends said, oh, it will probably take between 3 and 6 months. I don't know your experience as well. I feel so lucky that it happened like that. I just really thought that it was quite rare that it happened like that, but it does work.
Yeah, it just happens for some people like that. That's incredible.
So but good. Then I sometimes worry, like, I would love to have another baby. I'm not in a rush to do it at all. I'd actually quite like to wait till Sienna's a little bit older and kind of starting school and stuff before I have another baby. But it's really hard to know. Like, if I have friends that had a baby really easily the first time and then it took them a while the second time and they maybe had to even have some, like, fertility treatment. And you don't know until it happens to you. So I guess you can't, there's no point worrying about things. You've just got to, you know, you deal with it when you get there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what your experiences have been, if you don't mind me asking.
Been getting pregnant. Mm. I have PCOS. So my first pregnancy ended with a miscarriage. That's okay. And then I fell pregnant with Buzz about 8 or 9 months after that. And then Buddy was very quick. And then Max was a nice little surprise.
Okay.
I'd always said, in another 2 years, we'll have another one. And then that just happened, you know. You know.
So and after
two
age
kids,
gaps?
It was nice that we were having sex. You know, so that was good. But yes, our age gaps are 2 years and then 2.5. So they're quite close together. So I feel like we've had 7 full-on years because they are now 6 about to turn 7, 6, 5 and 2. So it's all a little bit bonkers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Our lockdown experience is very loud, Millie. Very, very loud and chaotic.
Sienna's at this stage, when you talk about noise, and I'm not sure if this happened if your kid did this. I'm sure, like, all babies do it. But she shrieks. And sometimes I think, you know, when she's excited, sometimes when she wants your attention, you know, she's just expressing herself. She can't talk yet. So she just, you know, she's really just testing out making noises and seeing how loud she can be. But it's like piercing my eardrums loud. And sometimes I'm like, it's like I'm not feeding her fast enough or talking to Hugo or I'm looking at my phone or something and she's kind of going, Mummy, like look at me. And other times, she just seems to be excited. But I mean, I guess you just got to be glad that they're, you know, communicating in some way.
Yeah.
But I sometimes honestly worry about it's going to damage my hearing.
Your hearing. That was one of my favourite things, I think, in baby groups, is every week babies coming in and them exploring new sounds. But you'd have one baby blowing raspberries or doing this weird sound and the mum would be like, yes, he's discovered this sound this week and he's just doing it on repeat. So who knows? She might move on to something else next week that's not quite so piercing. What was your pregnancy like? Did you have a good experience or did you have sickness?
I would say I felt it a lot. Like I didn't just breeze through. I had a lot of the symptoms. I found it hard emotionally and physically, but it was also mixed with so much joy that I was pregnant and I did still. So I wouldn't say it was like a negative experience, but I loved the fact I was pregnant, but it was tinged with like pelvic pain, which was really uncomfortable and got me quite down. Morning sickness at the beginning. I struggled with a bit of anxiety just generally around like the health of the baby, even though I had no reason to be worried. Just with it being a first pregnancy, anything from early on, I got lots of cramps. I don't know if you got that in any of your pregnancies. Yeah. It's quite common with a first pregnancy. And I was convinced that every time I was having these cramps, I was like losing the baby. I had a bit of unexplained bleeding. So that was a few trips to hospital and nothing was wrong. But each time again, you think, okay, why is there bleeding? And it's scary. But being a mum, it's just really scary.
Bit of it as well. It's that, you know, that first bit is literally that, well, first of all, trying to get pregnant and then trying your hardest to almost keep it. And I think so. It happened.
The first 12 weeks feel like that for sure.
Yeah,
you're scared to even think that it might be because what if it's not? And
And I definitely felt that my first pregnancy that sadly did end in a miscarriage. I definitely had that feeling because that happened so quickly. I had that feeling of I was too lucky.
I felt like that too. Like, and I, when I found out it was a girl as well, I was like, oh my God, I always wanted a girl. And I, we tried, got pregnant on the first try. Like, who gets that lucky? Like, I was, yeah. I had the exact same feeling. Like, it could yeah. be taken away from me, because who gets to get what they want? Like, life isn't like that. We're always told that. So I definitely really felt that fear as well.
Did it ease off? As you, I think so. Did it ease off as you got further into your pregnancy? Because then you had to contend with the whole COVID thing, which obviously then threw up yeah. loads of things in terms of Hugo even being allowed in the hospital, because I know loads of families are having that with their partners. Yeah. Did that make you feel quite anxious, just not knowing what you were going to be allowed to do when
yeah,
the baby
I'd say
arrived?
The anxiety kind of second trimester, like, you know, as after my 20-week scan, I felt calmer and we'd been kind of told everything seemed normal and the pregnancy was progressing well. And I had quite regular scans, even just for my own peace of mind, so I knew that she was fine. And then COVID, it was really scary because there was different information being shared and it wasn't very clear. Pregnant women were put into the high-risk category. So suddenly I was like, so is COVID really dangerous to me and my bun board maybe? And it actually wasn't, but that was very misleading and that was really scary. I remember being really upset. And then about 3 weeks before my actual date of the birth, because I was having a C-section, I knew when it was, I found out that Hugo wouldn't be able to stay in the hospital with me. So I knew I was going to be in a couple of nights because I was having a C-section. Yeah. And that was really hard to come to terms with. I'm glad that I had a bit of time because it allowed me to like make peace with it. But when I found out, that was really upsetting. And he couldn't come to my last kind of appointments and scans, and we'd FaceTime, but it just, you know, it wasn't the same. But I feel very grateful that I had him there with me at the beginning when I was, to be honest, more scared about the pregnancy. At that end point, I was just so ready to meet the baby, and I had a great obstetrician and a great midwife. And he was able to be at the birth, which is the main thing. And
it's just, you know, that thing, isn't it? They are your pillar, whoever you've chosen to be in that room with you,
yeah,
they are your support. So when you're suddenly told they can't be with you until this point and then they have to leave after this point, it's suddenly, because you know that birth is a thing where you just don't know what is going to happen, you kind of just want that support network there, at least something that is certain.
Yeah,
it must have been so weird him leaving.
It was, but at the same time I was so tired and you know, all these like drugs were in my system from having the surgery. I was really drowsy and I had like the midwives being amazing because I'd had a C-section, like kind of helping to change Sienna's nappies and like, you know, help me with breastfeeding and show me how to get a good latch. And I was so focused on I really wanted to breastfeed and I was really focused on that. And I was in two nights. It went really quickly and then he was able to come to the hospital to pick me up to go home.
Yeah.
And it was really scary leaving the hospital to go home. I don't know how long you spent in hospital when you had your first. But I was so scared to leave. I was like crying and hugging the midwife. Like, no, I'm not ready to do this on my own at home. It was really overwhelming because I just kind of got used to being in the hospital and like how it was all working and and then I was like, no, I've got to like get home and figure this all out at home.
But also because you had surgery, so I always say like C-sections, they're no small thing, so you've had that, and at least when you were still in hospital you had people who could be looking after you, helping you with Sienna, whereas when you go home, I know Hugo's there, but it's slightly different from like having your partner to having medical people surrounding
you. Like you've got like trained medical staff there like just in case of, you know, that it does make you feel more safe. And you're like, you've got this tiny little human to take home and take care of, and they're so fragile. But then also looking back, those first few weeks are so special. And the house was just filled with peonies. It was May. It was beautiful weather outside. There was constant cakes and just constant baby snuggles. And actually, I remember that more than the sleep deprivation and the crying and the, you know, painful cracked nipples, because you do romanticise it a bit, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you've just said peonies and cake and newborn snuggles, and that is such a romanticised version of that first few weeks.
Yeah, just forget all the other stuff. Your brain actually makes you forget. I've been told this. It's like, otherwise, we wouldn't want to keep having babies. So, like, your brain, like, forgets the pain of the childbirth, forgets the trauma, and then just makes you remember all the good bits.
Well, you did bring us straight down to earth with cracked nipples. So, you know, we weren't getting too comfy there. There's nothing like that pain, but you saying
I have to say,
literally.
It's so painful. Worse than my C-section pain.
Really?
Breastfeeding was much more painful for me than any pain related to my surgery. I remember, like, calling my mum crying, being like, ow, it hurts. But it gets easier. I used nipple shields, actually, and that really sorted me out.
I did. And so did my sister. Yeah. It's that thing, just give your nipples a bit of a break. And also for me, like, Buzz was quite a small baby, so it kind of helped us both a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it helps
them
get the shape. Like, it depends on the shape of your nipple. And then, like, Sienna, because she has reflux, like, I didn't even really realise how bad her reflux was when I was breastfeeding. It made sense a lot when I stopped, but the shields really, like, helped. If I hadn't used shields, I wouldn't have been able to breastfeed for more than a couple of days, I don't think.
Well, there is, it's just that pain, isn't it? I last time around, I got those pads as well that you can put on.
I know, and then there's things like cabbage leaves, and the whole breastfeeding thing was just uncomfortable for so many reasons. How painful is it when your milk comes in? Like, my boobs, I look back at pictures, they are as big as my head. Right,
and it's crazy, and it's every single part of the breast tissue does something everywhere.
Just so swollen. I've got a picture of the day my milk came in. I think it was like the day after I got back from hospital, like properly, like all came in.
Yeah.
And it's like my skin's so tight. You know, I just remember they were like popping out of my like nursing nightie that I had, and it just nothing fit because it's just insane.
And but then they're also like rocks.
Like
they're
rocks.
Absolute rocks.
And they just keep going down and filling up and going down and filling up.
Yeah.
And the worst bit about breastfeeding for me, and don't get me wrong, I loved the, like, you know, connection with Sienna and we had some special moments, but the pumping is such a pain. And I was like, why do I have to pump? And can't I just breastfeed? And then I realised I had to pump because otherwise I was getting really, like, blocked and I didn't want to get mastitis. So the pumping, it just came with breastfeeding. If I wanted to breastfeed, I had to do the pumping as almost like kind of like maintenance. And then obviously having like the milk, like extra spare milk was useful as well. And like had like a store in the freezer.
I became obsessed with the freezer store. I loved
I had so much milk. I had like almost too much. I had more milk than I needed.
Yeah.
And so I was constantly just having to make sure I'd like drain my boob properly and just the sound of the pump, having to clean the pump. Have you got all the pump parts?
It's ingrained in my head.
When you have to do it in the night.
Oh. I know. But third time round, I actually discovered two new products that I hadn't had the first and second. A Hacker, which is literally like a silicone cup
that goes on.
Really cheap. And the other one is an LV, far more expensive, but just literally goes in your bra and you can go about your day and forget about it. The amount of taxis that I've sat in the back of expressing with an LV in my bra, it was incredible.
I've got friends that I saw use that a lot. I had the Medela one, which had a
brilliant
bra. So so I would walk around with it on, or at least be able to like make dinner or something with it on.
I always felt a bit like Madonna with that, with the bra on with those.
Yeah.
Madonna gone wrong, or Madonna gone maternal. There
you can't really hide it. You couldn't be like really driving or something. Well, I mean, you could, but yeah, it's a look.
When did you stop breastfeeding? And was that a difficult decision to make?
I stopped when Sienna was about 4 months old. And I'd planned to do it. I thought, okay, I'm gonna, once I'd got into it, I was like, okay, I'll do it for at least 6 months and then see. So I was hard to stop initially, but Sienna, it was combined with the timing of discovering Sienna's hip dysplasia, and that was actually when she was around 3 months old, and she had to wear a special harness for 6 weeks, and this harness literally like pulled her legs up like this. Like, she had to wear it, like, all day. and it made it really hard to, so she, her legs are in a fixed position. She's kind of almost like a little, in like a frog. Yeah. And she was really, it was, her body was quite stiff, like, because she's like, you know, being held like this. So trying to feed her in the harness became really awkward and uncomfortable, and we both weren't enjoying it. It got quite stressful. It just really combined with discovering, realising around that time, I was also like recommended to read a book by a friend called The Sensational Baby Sleep Plan.
I've read it. I love it. Yeah.
And by the amazing Alison. And it was like, I wanted to figure out a way to kind of get Sienna into a better routine. She would cry for hours every evening, and it was really stressful. This is before the harness. Like, the harness made her extra distressed, but she, all the way through, it had this kind of witching hour or slash 3 hours in the evening when she'd been really difficult. And people had just said, oh, it's just babies cry, and she's just, you know, she's just tired and blah, blah, blah. And when I read the book, I was like, interested in how to do sleep training and stuff like that. It said you can't do any of this kind of controlled crying and sleep training if the baby has any of these issues. So if the baby has any of these symptoms, you need to get to the bottom of it. Went through the list, was like, yep, right, she's got silent reflux. Then I literally was like messaging Alison. We got on the phone. She was so helpful. I was actually in tears because she was just like, don't worry. Like, she was like, we are going to do something about it. This is not normal. Your baby shouldn't be crying like this, and we're going to sort it out. We spoke to a gastric specialist, and he recommended that she went onto a prescribed formula as well as medication for her reflux. And we put her onto the medication straight away. I needed a bit of time to decide I was ready to stop breastfeeding. So maybe it took me about another 2 weeks. I spoke to a very good friend of mine, and she said, look, you don't have to decide to give up to stop breastfeeding. It was on a Friday. She said, why don't you just pump all weekend? Give her, so that your milk supply is not going to dry up over the weekend, just like keep pumping, give her the formula if she'll take it. And then on Monday, see if it's made a difference. And then you can like decide what you want to do. And she was so different by Monday that I just didn't breastfeed again.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is the right thing. Yeah. And I thought, I was like, oh, you know, should I have one last breastfeed? Like, and I just actually was like, no, it's like, it's we had our special like time, and it was just, you know, time to move on from it. And it was really just about what was best for Sienna. I always wanted her to be comfortable. I wanted her to be happy. I wanted her to be able to have proper naps in the day, sleep through the night. And it was a total game changer. We then had a proper routine. She slept through the night. She had day naps, and it was just like, I felt like I slowly started to get my life back and started to feel a bit more human. Because I, you know, was having that time and actually having an evening with Hugo, which was so nice again.
Well, because sleep's a huge thing, absolutely huge. And I know that you found the first 6 weeks quite tough. Do you think sleep was also a part of that?
Definitely, yeah. You don't feel like yourself when you don't sleep. And I definitely know that it affects my mental health quite a lot when I'm not sleeping well. And, you know, we still go through phases. Like, Sienna just got a third tooth, and like last week, you know, was crying a bit in the night. And I don't know about you with yours when they were little babies, but when they've cried like one night, then the next night, even if they sleep through, like, you're often awake thinking, like, are they going to cry tonight? Or if they cry once, and then the rest of the night, like, kind of only half asleep, because I'm expecting, like, is she going to cry again? Or and you're like kind of sleeping with like one ear open, one eye open.
How are Sienna's hips now?
They are, thanks for asking. They seem to be good. It was a bit weird. We had a follow-up appointment over Zoom, which is what they're doing at the moment. I kind of thought, how can you tell if things are fine? But you know, the specialist physio, she like watched how Sienna was crawling, and she said it looks completely normal, and she... There's different like types of hip dysplasia and different like levels of severity, and we were lucky she didn't have a really severe case, and they said they really don't take the harness off unless they're sure that it's done the job. It was just one of her hips where the socket wasn't deep enough, and then the harness helped it to like kind of grow properly so that the hip like was secure. And they said they won't do any checks now till she's 18 months, but they're like in terms of like an X-ray or a scan.
Yeah.
But I think they're seeing her when she's one. So in May, we've actually got an appointment like in person for them to just do a physical examination and just have a feel and have a look at how she's moving and stuff. But they said the fact she was crawling really early was a good sign, and hopefully she'll be, I mean, she's trying to stand up now, so I think she'll be walking around the time when she's one.
That must have been worrying when you were told that. But did you have any idea that something wasn't quite right, or was it literally in a routine appointment?
It was a routine appointment because she was breech. Breech babies, and especially girl babies who are breech, are more likely to have hip dysplasia. So because she was breech, I had a scan, a routine scan, which is done on the NHS. I took her in when she was 6 weeks old, and they said it was kind of too early to tell, but they thought possibly something was wrong with one of the hips, but that they thought it would correct itself naturally over the next 6 weeks. So it went away, and I really, honestly, I didn't even, like, Google it. I don't know if it sounds bad. I wasn't worried about it because they kind of said, like, yeah, we're sure it would kind of, like, sort itself out. And then, so when I took her in at 12 weeks, and they said, actually, no, we've got to, like, put her in a harness today. And, you know, we left the hospital with her, you know, in a harness. And actually, I had to go to the appointment on my own because of COVID. So Hugo, like, couldn't even, you know, be there. And it was a real shock.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, I don't understand. Like, what do you mean? Like, what's actually going on? And I didn't know much about the condition. I'd never even heard of this harness before. And I did have my doubts. You know, I was like, is this the only option? I felt kind of angry. Like, should I explore? Should I get a different, you know, get another doctor? Should I get a different opinion? Does this harness work? Because, you know, she was crying and crying for the first kind of couple of days. Like, the first night, I slept with her on my chest the entire night. I didn't sleep. Like, she was literally, the only way she wouldn't cry was just if I, like, held her in a particular way on my chest. So I just, like, sat up with her like this. That was really hard because she was such a happy, like, chilled out baby most of the time, apart from a bit of reflux. But and while she was getting used to the harness, she just was so confused and kind of looking at us like, why do I have to wear this thing? And
yeah,
that it was really hard not to just take it off, to be honest. I wanted to take it off and just be like, no, like, there's got to be another way. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Oh.
It was a test for sure. But the day it came off was just the best feeling. And it just makes you so grateful when, you know, things are good. It makes you really appreciate all the little things.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful that they caught it, and hopefully she's not going to have any issues, you know, with her movement at all during her life. A lot of people on Instagram, I actually posted about it, and I had such an amazing response from people, and loads of people messaged me saying, I should have had this harness when I was little and they didn't find it in time, or it hadn't been invented yet. And because of that, I've had so many operations and issues throughout my life. So lots of people were kind of saying, like, you're really lucky that you found it. And so many parents also messaging me, loads of mums saying how amazing the harness was, sending me pictures of their baby in the harness and then pictures and videos of them then, like, you know, running around as whatever, as a 2-year-old going, promise you it works. And I just actually found social media so helpful, and so it was so, it gave me a lot of hope and made me feel less alone and less scared. And I think I've really tried to post in quite an honest and candid way throughout my pregnancy and kind of motherhood journey so far, because I think it does help people also if they can, you know, relate to what you're going through. And
you really have. It feels like, as an outsider looking in, like, you've really shifted in terms of what you put out there and how much of you put out there. You know, there is this beautiful honesty, this candidness. I know that I've messaged you about it before and just sort of said how much your words, and for other mums going through it, how much they will help. You were also very honest about how you were feeling emotionally after giving birth. Would you say that you experienced postnatal depression, or was it something else? Was it hormones? What was it?
At the time, what I found really scary is that I didn't know what it was. And I like to be quite in control And I couldn't gauge whether I did have postnatal depression or whether it was baby blues. So kind of, you know, people talk about the baby blues and, oh, you're going to be a bit tearful and it's really normal to be up and down. But I had some really low days and it was hard because I was so, like, in love with Sienna and so happy. But then, you know, a couple of hours later, I could just be feeling completely blue, really, really low, couldn't stop crying. And there were, you know, there were days definitely as well. It was hard for Hugo. Like, he would then be like, are you okay? Like, and then yeah. I'd be like, oh God, I need you to tell me I'm okay. Don't you freak out about me not being okay. And then, you know, I
we literally had that moment. We had that moment where I was crying and then Tom started crying. Yeah. And it was just this
and
whole
the baby's
thing.
Crying. And we're like, yeah. All crying. And then I kept being like, but I should be happy. Why am I not happy? But why don't, and then I'd be like, have this expectation that, you know, you've got your beautiful baby and like, you should be happy all the time. But of course it is actually really hard as well. And you are tired and, you know, your body's just been through this massive thing. And now you're trying to deal with like the biggest shift in your life ever. So I, looking back on it, and I chose not to speak about it until a bit of time had passed because I wanted to be sure. I didn't want to talk about it while I was right in the thick of it. And I think it was the baby blues because by my 6-week check, it had kind of passed.
Yeah. So One thing I'd read that you did, which I thought was brilliant, is that you wrote almost like a mood journal. So you wrote it down how you were feeling at different points. Yeah.
I wrote in a journal every day, like a diary, a really brief diary of what was going on with Sienna. So, you know, dirty nappies, wet nappies, times of feeds, how much, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so in there, I would just put like, even sometimes just like a sad or happy face, whether I'd felt low on that day or not. So then that was actually something that my doctor recommended doing because he was like, just keep a track of it. And then when you come for your 6-week check, we can really like look at it and try to work out what's going on. And if we need to like get you some treatment and like, don't freak out because like, we're going to keep an eye on it. And then, that did actually really help.
How did it feel when you started sharing about that experience? Because so many women would be able to relate to that.
Yes, so many people said they had experienced the same thing and they feel like it's not talked about enough. And yeah, I definitely felt like I connected with a lot of women and it made me really emotional as well. Just, you know, brings a lot of it like back up. And I think often we do just put a brave face on it.
Well, because we know that we should be thankful that we've got this little baby that we've longed for and we all want to be super mum and swimming through it and making it, you know, as amazing as, you know, everyone seems to find it. And actually it's far more complex than that. It's not straightforward.
I mean, yeah, there will be times when you're crying with happiness, but at the same time, sadness, like
I know that feeling so well. You're just like, I actually don't know
it's
what this is
sweet.
Right now.
Yeah. And it's a confusing feeling. You go, why are you crying? I don't know. And like, you'd be like, what's wrong? And I'd be like, the fact I don't know is like, what's wrong?
Like, I literally broke down in tears. My aunt had told me that I shouldn't be eating tomatoes while breastfeeding. And after they'd left, my brother and my sister over, and I can just remember breaking down in tears, like proper breakdown in tears.
Yeah.
It wasn't about the tomatoes. It was everything, all just like building up. But yeah, it's just those tiny things that you don't know what's going to set you off.
Exactly. You just don't know. I found the first few weeks, everything was really difficult, thinking about, you know, anything like, oh, we need food. Okay, well, but your brain is just so taken up with the baby. I found it really difficult to function and do much more than literally just breastfeed. And I was so hungry those first few weeks. I just have this insane hunger. Like, I was hungry when I was pregnant. When I got home from hospital, I've never been so hungry. It was like when my milk came in, I just was ravenous all the time. And I don't think that stopped till I finished breastfeeding.
No. We used to have snacks by the bed. For those midnight feeds. And I remember the first few
weeks.
What
did you have?
Boring things like crackers and stuff, to be fair. But I can remember we used to turn the light, like first baby, we would turn the light on. We'd both, like Tom would be there, we'd watch Countdown like really early in the morning. We'd make a thing of it. By third baby, you're just rummaging around in the dark trying to find the baby to put on the boob.
Yeah.
But first time round, yeah, we had all the snacks up there, all the drinks, everything prepared for that, for that, those nighttime feeds.
I really would have a baby bell. And a fruit roll-up.
Really?
Like, and a breastfeeding cookie.
So, oh my gosh, I had breastfeeding cookies third time round. They're insane.
Yeah, but I really didn't need all of them. But, you know, it was like, I just was like, it was like this magic combination. So each feed, I would have that in the night. And then my daytime feeds, like Hugo would get me a kind of like ice cream with like... or it would be like, you know, healthy ice cream, like vegan ice cream, but with like, you know, granola on top and like banana on top. It's so good. But yeah, just, so I can't, I don't eat like that now all the time, but I enjoyed it. And Sienna enjoyed it because she got some really great nutritious milk.
Yeah, that baby milk, that baby bell just went straight to her.
Yeah, my milk was actually like cream. It was like so thick.
So funny about the breastfeeding cookies, because I can remember getting them. And I think nearly every feed I was like, I think I need one for this feed because it will help.
It will help. It will make a difference to milk.
Another thing that you've been amazing about, because you've always been into fitness, as long as I've followed you, fitness is a huge thing for you. And what you've been brilliant at sharing is the idea of looking at your body. There's something brilliant that you said about looking in the mirror and not really recognizing the person there, like not seeing. Yeah. It's a weird thing of not seeing who was there before.
Yeah.
So that thing of almost... respecting and loving your body, yeah, but also loving it as it is, but trying not to break that down by comparing yourself to the body that you had before,
the pre-baby body. Yeah, the one thing I struggle with it is people always just saying to me when I was pregnant, oh, you'll get your body back in no time, you know, you'll bounce back, you'll have,
because you're slim and tall, aren't you,
your pre-baby body. I have always been naturally slim, like that is my frame.
It was only
in my 20s that I got into exercise and actually started to have a kind of more like toned physique, because that's not my natural thing. That was just through, you know, I wanted to have that strong like athletic look, and I really enjoyed exercise, and when I got pregnant I feel like in my kind of best physical shape, so to speak, like just through having a really healthy lifestyle, feeling really strong, being in a really good place in my fitness. I'd, you know, and kind of found a really good balance of the way I like to eat for just my kind of general like well-being, I guess, like a good balance. And then I got pregnant and I had, you know, I really enjoyed eating during my pregnancy, and I have to say, not being at all restrictive and not having kind of, I'll just have my cheat meal on the weekend. It was like, hey, I'll have cake every day of the week. And I did it. I really enjoyed that. But it did mean after I gave birth, I found it, and I think it's good to be honest about it, I found it really hard to deal with the kind of weight I'd gained after I'd given birth. Because when I was pregnant, I just was like, I loved my pregnant body, and I felt so proud of my bump and my kind of bigger boobs, and I like loved my curves, and I loved like dressing to show off my bump.
Yeah.
And then after I'd had the baby, it was like I just still looked pregnant for kind of almost like 3 months, I'd say.
Really, some days I still look pregnant.
And yeah, well, same, especially at the end of the day, it's like the lower stomach. And I just found it really hard to dress. I felt really self-conscious. And I had, my big breastfeeding boobs, and it was the summer, and I just found it really, really difficult to find clothes that fit me and feel like me. And then just looking in the mirror when I undressed, I found tricky for a while. It was hard to actually practice that like self-love and accept my new body.
Can I ask, did you ever know before having a baby that your body, I mean, everybody is different anyway, but having people say to you, you'll lose it, no problem, you know, you're going to go back to that. Ugh. Was it then a shock afterwards because of that? Because you've always been slim,
honestly,
people saying that.
It was a shock. And I think there's a lot of these terms thrown around and like a lot of like myths, and it is so different for everybody. But things like it just, the weight just falls off if you breastfeed. It didn't for me.
Yeah, no. Because of those cookies that we were eating,
I think I put weight on while I was breastfeeding. Like, because I was like, I can eat all these extra calories. It's just going straight into my milk. But I think I took that like, and then some. And I wasn't like moving much. It was a shock. People say, people tell you when you stop breastfeeding, it also just falls off. I also didn't find that happened. It took a while. Mm-hmm. Nothing just fell off overnight. Like, let's be honest, like it's taken me like almost a year to, and I'm not back at my pre-baby weight and I'm not fixated on that at all, but it's taken me nearly a year to start fitting into my clothes again.
Mm.
And that's longer than I probably, if you'd said to me when I first got pregnant, before I was pregnant, like it will take you a year to like fit into like some of your clothes, I probably would have thought it would have been sooner than that. But I really haven't kind of wanted to beat myself up about it. You know, we have been in lockdown, so it's been really easy to wear lots of loungewear and lycra and things with, you know, no tight jeans and things with like restrictive waistbands. So it's actually been quite a good time to like not worry about the wardrobe, because where would I have worn it anyway?
Yeah. I still find it now, that I have moments where I'm like, I'm fine. My body's growing babies, like growing humans. I'm absolutely fine. And then other moments where I'm like, why does nothing fit me? So it's that weird thing of kind of,
definitely.
To be honest, I hate to say it because I'm going to touch wood here, but for quite a while now, I've just been a bit like, this is me. I'm fine. I've not been able to move around much because we're in lockdown. The kids are here all the time, and we maybe go out once a day for a walk in the woods, and that's all the movement that we're having. And I don't have that spare time to exercise. But I think it is interesting for so many women how you have highs and lows when it comes to your perception of your body and your body confidence. And sometimes you're there and you're loving it, and other times not so much.
I think that also just comes with different times of the month. I don't know about you, but when I'm just before my period, like this last week, I've been like, oh, I'm so bloated. And then like when I'm ovulating, I'm always like, my body looks great. Like, my boobs are a bit bigger.
There's a reason for that. There's a reason for it.
Kind of like, So I definitely think different times of the month, I fluctuate naturally anyway and would have times where I just feel a bit more, but I think it's nice. One thing I found in lockdown is just sometimes just making the effort to like, you know, dry my hair and not just like let it naturally dry, like, you know, style it, tong it, put a bit of makeup on, put on something that makes me feel nice, whether that's, you know, even just, it could just be loungewear, but just like, you know, fancy loungewear rather than the one that's got 6 stains on it. Or, you know, a pair of, just something, you know, something for my wardrobe.
I love that we've got to the stage where we wear fancy loungewear. That's where we're at in life. Just the bit that's not got a poo stain. That's all I want.
Just the one that's like, not stained. It's actually clean. Or just putting on a favourite dress or something. And maybe whether it's for like a date night with Hugo, where we on Friday nights, we like to kind of have a nice meal and, you know, something that we maybe haven't cooked, and have like a glass of wine. It's nice to make that effort and kind of remind yourself that when you put in a bit of effort to make yourself feel nice, that you're like, ah, I still got it. Like, you know, and I think it's just, it's important as a mum to do that. Remind yourself that you're like a person as well as a mum.
Do you feel like this has changed you two as a couple at all?
I think because our relationship, because we've known each other so long and we've got a really good friendship at the base of our relationship, that our relationship's like built on that. I've found that that's really just been strengthened, and I feel like we are such good friends and such a good team with Sienna. We found a really good balance of, okay, honey, like, you know, on the weekends, like one day one of us has a lion, then the other one will have a lion, or, you know, we take turns like making dinner while the other one does like bed and bath time, and trying to just check in with each other and make sure, okay, honey, like you really seem like you need some fresh air. Why don't you go for a walk? Like, I'll take her for an hour, and just trying to kind of be quite mindful of each other's like mental health with lockdown as well. Yeah, obviously it's hard at times, but I think we've never really argued much, and obviously apart from the really tired in the middle of the night, like, you go, no, can you go? Like, you know, we just...
It happens to everyone. It still happens in our house. It's that gentle nudge that's actually a bit more of a shove out of the bed.
No, he is really good. I've found I have to sometimes just tell him when I need him to do something. Well, he's not going to guess.
Yeah.
It's just, unless I actually say, honey, I need you to do this, I've had to learn to communicate better rather than just... being like passive aggressive.
And that's so true, because so often it is that thing of, why can you not just read my mind?
Yeah, and they why can't you read not just mind. Do
it? Yeah, so it is that thing of actually maybe just sometimes vocalizing it, and they'll go, oh yeah, I'll do that. And rather than just kind of going around the kitchen cupboard and slamming things a little bit, you're just kind of going, do you know what, it'd be really helpful.
Or I'd say
you...
it, but not say it, and that really annoys him. Like, I'd kind of be like, and then he'd be like, do you just want to ask me to do it? And I'd be like, can't you just tell I want you to do it? So why wouldn't you just do it? Because I want you to ask.
Can you not just do it?
Just Tom, do it!
Tom, this morning, for the first time of the whole of lockdown, I can't remember the last time I've ever seen him do it, he got the laundry out the basket and was separating it into, well, he did go whites and colours and darks together.
Okay, but like...
Which was okay. And then I just...
At least it was like a mixed load, and at least there was a light.
Yeah.
At least the light and dark were separated.
Yeah. But we are a family of five. That's a lot of clothes in the dark and colour. So I did say, I usually separate those. But the fact that he did it without me, I was so taken aback that he was even doing it.
That's good. Yeah.
I fell in love with him all over again in that moment.
Exactly. Yeah.
Millie, I wrote a book about letters. It's all of letters on motherhood. And I was wondering if you could write a letter on motherhood. It could be to anyone, anything. So my letters were to the kids, to Tom, to me, to body bits, to my phone. Who would you write a letter to, and what would it say?
Wow. I actually wrote myself a letter before I was pregnant saying, in a year's time, you'll be pregnant.
Did you?
Yeah, I went to the body camp, and it's this place in Ibiza where you go and do a kind of really healthy week of like hiking and yoga, and they do lots of like life coaching, and it's really, really great. And when I was there, like, it was sort of like a kind of exercise. We all had to write a letter to ourselves, and like literally they all like took them away, like stored them, and then they put them in the post, you know, whatever, to arrive a year later. And when I opened it, it said like, you will be pregnant, and oh, it was like, I'd like completely forgotten about it.
Oh,
it was
my
really
gosh.
Spooky.
That's a good letter story. I like it. You've already written yourself a letter, and it was futuristic in the sense that you basically predicted the future. I like that.
Yeah.
And we end every episode with you completing three sentences.
Yeah. Okay.
Being a mum means?
The world to me.
Since having children, I...
have got my first grey hairs.
Oh, Millie! I've got so many now. Honestly, I can remember being...
They keep appearing. They keep finding
new
ones.
Are you putting them out?
Yeah. Is that bad?
Well, to be honest, I did. I did that a lot. And then I can remember being in labour, my third pregnancy, and between contractions, I was literally pulling out grey hairs in the bathroom. Because nothing happens between contractions. You're just there. And I can remember pulling out grey hairs in the mirror as something to do. And then, since lockdown, I've kind of given up. But it's only if they're right in the front, I'm like, oh, you're coming out. Otherwise, I'm just like, oh, they're overtaking.
Well, yeah, if I can't see them, it's like, yeah. But it's gonna happen. But it's scary, like, having kids. It's amazing, but it's also terrifying. And it gives you grey hairs. It's stressful.
I haven't worked out yet whether I'm going to try and cover them up or not. Because I'm not very good at things that require maintenance, like colouring my hair, doing my nails, anything like that. I'm awful. So I think, I don't know,
I think, well, just embrace it. Like, it's a real look. I think, just go
with
it.
Do I have to go grey all at once, though? Is that the look, rather than grey hairs just here or there, Millie? Come on, tell me.
I feel like it's quite a look, quite like Sarah Harris, have this, like, long, kind of, like, white grey hair. You could just, like, dye it pink or something for fun. Just
maybe there we go. Thank you.
Like, kind of light pinky grey. That was definitely a trend. But Yeah, I'm not sure what I'm going to do either yet, whether I'm going to colour it or
we're just both holding our heads, kind of going, I'm not quite sure. Just don't look too close.
Yeah, and it's like something that I lean back. I'm going to embrace it. I think I'm not going to panic about it.
Nah, we're getting older. That's just a fact of life.
Yeah.
And the final sentence, I'm happy when...
I was thinking about this one. I am happy when, do you know, is that happy feeling when I've had a good day with Sienna, but she's gone to bed and then I get my evening with Hugo. That's, aww, you know, but yeah, also I love waking up and getting to go and get her up.
Aww.
And you know how they're really cute in the morning? Me and Hugo fight each other to get to her bedroom door first.
Aww.
This is probably really sad. It would only ever happen with your first child. We often both go in together and just cuddle her like in a kind of family hug. And it's like the best, aww, best like way to start the day.
That's so beautiful. I can picture you all doing that. That's gorgeous.
It's
Millie, thank you so much for taking your time, for giving us one of your precious evenings when Sienna's asleep. Thank you so much.
Oh, no, well, thank you so much for having me. It's a really good time because she's asleep, your kids are asleep. You have such a hectic day. And we're so glad that we found the time and managed to chat. It was so lovely, and I've really enjoyed connecting with you, and
yeah,
I think you're such an inspiration.